Hey SEOs and content marketers, say goodbye to crazy spreadsheet mashups and experience unprecedented connectivity between your SEO planning and reporting data. Introducing Audience Key, technology for keyword mapping, content brief automation, and rank tracking that form an SEO strategy system providing unparalleled feedback loops between planning, reporting, and optimization activities. Put your time and energy into strategy, not data upkeep. Visit audiencekey.com and apply for a free trial today.
Hey everyone, welcome to Webcology here on WMR.fm. It's the 4th of December, 2025. So this is like the third, maybe, I think it's the third last show we're doing of 2025, just because of the way Christmas and New Year's are falling. Christmas actually falls on a Thursday, so I can promise we're not recording on that date. This is Jim Hedger from Digital Always Media and Christine Chackinger from Sites Without Walls.
Hi, everybody.
Special shout out to Audience Key and Wix Studio, our sponsors. And also, you know, shout out to Ricky and Brasco and to Darren and Brandy. And I'm really graceful. I'll even remember to thank them at the end of the show. I'm often not graceful, but it's got some forgetful's hack. It's been a busy week. You'd think leading into December, you know, Black Friday and Cyber Monday week would be, you know, mellower or something. But no, it's been a busy week, but it must have been a terrible Cyber Monday for people who are on Shopify, or at least some people who are running Shopify sites who had logged out of their Shopify site before going to bed on the 30th and woke up on the 1st to find that they couldn't log back in on like Cyber Monday.
No, they're even advised to not log out if they had not already.
But, you know, I mean, like you close up your desk on the night before, right? Which happened to be a Friday. You have to,
go back in tomorrow.
Well, not go back in tomorrow.
Go back in on Monday.
When you close your desk up, you close things down, right? You log out, you shut your machine down.
Shut your machine down? I have a Mac. I like do it once every 60 days.
Okay. Well, you certainly log out of active accounts that you have logged in. And so you come in on Monday, and as it turned out, Shopify was hit by a login outage. And yes, people weren't able to get into their dashboards, point of sale systems, mobile apps. They couldn't even get to Shopify support. It wasn't until about 10 a.m. that Shopify status page started showing alerts, at least giving clues to what was going on. And by like 10:30, and by the way, that like every second that passes on Cyber Monday that you can't get to your stats or into your store is an hour that turns into a lifetime really quick. So at 10:26, 10:30, Shopify is telling merchants, if you're logged in, stay logged in on any active devices. Don't log out at all. But it wasn't until about 5:30 that Shopify was able to tell people that they'd actually isolated, fixed, and tested the problem, and, you know, could say that the ticket had actually been solved. So for Eastern time, all of Cyber Monday, I couldn't imagine how that would have felt.
Yeah, at least the data wasn't lost, though, and they were, I mean, it's terrible because you're making adjustments all day on a day like that, but at least they were able to recoup it all. Just unfortunately, we're flying blind all day Monday.
These things have been happening like pretty frequently to different softwares, different APIs, different applications. There was a Sitebulb had a login login outage just a couple of weeks ago, when Cloudflare went down.
Yeah, there's one today for X and Cloudflare as well. I'm guessing they're getting attacked. That's the only thing I can think of that would cause it to happen so often.
Well, this is the annoyance, one of the annoyances of 2025, eh?
Yeah, definitely. Well, cyber attacks are way up because now they can use the AI to just write and rewrite them over and over again while they're in play. So it's not like one person wrote code and you can stop that code. They can keep changing themselves. Shapeshifters.
So constant 0 minute posture. Okay. Google's rolling out Gemini 3 and Nano Banana Pro in AI mode to more people, to actually 120 countries around the world. Pretty much any country that speaks English, you now got Gemini 3 and Nano Banana Pro.
Yes, because it's only in English right now. So that's why. So if you're in a country that doesn't get it, that might be the reason. So they don't have multi-language versions yet.
But it's, again, it's rolled out to 120 some odd countries. So some pretty funky material that's going to be produced by just about anybody really soon.
Yeah. And I heard Nano Banana Pro is so realistic. Yeah. You may not even be able to tell that it's AI. It's a little scary, but that's what people will be getting. I haven't tested it yet, though, the new Nano Banana. I just saw some reviews on it.
Well, as for Gemini 3, Gemini 3 is virtually everywhere now anyway, is it not?
No, it's in a lot of places, but not everywhere yet. But it plays a feature part in a future story today.
Well, I think it's going to play a feature part in a whole bunch of stuff moving forward just because, well, we'll see. We'll see how that goes. Okay, so if you're looking at Search Console and really frustrated that you can't see anything past Monday, nobody can see anything past Monday, and it's really frustrating.
Yeah, I came back for a little on the first. Sorry, I didn't mean you up there. And then in the articles I read today, it looks like it's sometimes popping back up and then going away. So I don't know what the state is this moment today, but it is definitely behind.
Well, you're usually a day behind in Search Console. So, you know, when you're looking at it, you're used to being a day behind. I mean, it now has up to 24-hour reporting and that sort of stuff. But you can go to Search Console, click over to the More button, add your own date. So add today's date or yesterday's date, and it'll bring you a limited view of traffic that came in with the caption, still gathering data, still gathering traffic. But yeah, it's Google Search Console is lagging behind, and it's very, you know, this is the beginning of the month, and that just, you know, it ain't for nothing that it was just Cyber Monday and Black Friday, yeah, like this week.
You might want to see that data. It's on your performance reports and your page indexing, by the way, just to make sure. You might see it in some places, just not others.
Yeah. And also, for what it's worth, go to Google Analytics 4, troll around in there a lot. You can tell a lot of the story from Google Analytics 4 that Search Console is giving you, but there is reams of data you're not going to be able to see, at least not up to date.
Well, we have a surprise change on the Google homepage.
Oh, yeah?
We do. We now have, if you upload an image or a file, it goes directly to AI mode. So it will not take you to like regular Google search or even Google Lens, but Google AI mode. Okay. I personally not a fan of this experience because I already do it with expanded AI overviews. When you're thinking you're going to get the expanded AI overview and you get AI mode, they're trying to blend in AI mode more and more. I'm just not a fan. If I put up my image in there, I don't want you to summarize something about it. Like, I just want to find out what Google like Lens probably knows. So it's a plus sign on the left side of your homepage. Although I don't use the homepage in Google all that often. I generally use the search, you know, address bar in my browser. So
I imagine, based on user behaviors and how people react to this, that Google's going to start either adding options, giving you the option to like put in an image and then maybe a bit of text to tell Google to contextualize what you want it to do with the object, or just use the radio buttons. So we'll see what Google lets people choose to do moving forward.
Yeah, because it's like, what's the point of going to AI mode for a photo I upload? Like, I took a photo of something. I want probably an image to see what the image looks like, because it doesn't, when you use like a photo, it doesn't usually get a direct match. It's very rare that it directly matches your photo. But like someone on Facebook might go, what's this bird? And I'm like, oh, I'll throw it in Lens. And, you know, you'll get a bunch of images and one of them looks enough like it. You're like, that's it. But going to AI mode is just, I don't know, she's weird to me for an image or your own file that you're uploading.
Honestly, my guess is Google is trying to learn what it's what Gemini knows based on user reaction.
definitely possible.
Why else would they do that? They have the largest testing sandbox on the planet. And we've seen them use that testing sandbox like liberally in the past, why wouldn't they be doing it again? Google does does the same thing over and over again. Why wouldn't
it does? And you're right. They may add in a definer or a limiter or something to refine it, because it just is weird to me that it's not really the response I would want to go into that.
Well, ultimately, I think it's what Google, Bing, and anybody who's I don't want to say traditional or algorithmic, but who is adding AI components onto tools that people have been using for a long period of time. I think instead of assuming that the AI is going to be immediately useful to the user, I think let us choose how the AI should be useful to us, if at all. And then see how users react. And I bet you we're going to get there, because Google always seems to go towards offering choices until it can intuit what people want from their query types.
Yeah, definitely possible. Probably more likely than not, it'll go into a different direction. So, but on first initiation, it just seems like a weird thing. But you're right, it's probably for training and testing.
Well, so as of Monday, it's been getting to look a lot like Christmas, or at least the holiday seasons. The holiday logos, Google logos for 2025, are up. You got Christmas, Hanukkah, and Quasi-Doodles.
I'm a little disappointed, though, because again, it does. Last time it linked to AI mode, and this time it doesn't link to anything. Like these have, I've always kind of liked the idea that I don't know if all of them, but a lot of them are even created outside of Google. You know, they have contests, like, will they have kids develop them? And so the idea that they may just be using AI to create them is just kind of disappointing. I always kind of like the idea that there was a person at Google or a person from a contest submitting the doodle. So we'll see if we get the information back. Because usually they give the information about they give you a whole page of search results, and they give the information about the doodle and how it was created and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So unfortunately, it's not there anymore. That's the second time they haven't offered information about the doodle.
So you hover over, click on it, you don't get anything?
You don't get anything this time. Last time I put you in AI mode, but you didn't, or an AI overview, I forget which one. But you didn't get any information about the doodle. It's just an overview. Like it wasn't really meaningful. So, when I used to work for the federal government, we'd always check at the seasons, we'd check the doodle because we'd always get into that page. Mm-hmm. And then I'd always read the little story about, you know, how the doodle was created or who made it and that kind of stuff, or why they made it. And so it's always just a nice little touch. It's a little thing, but it's just a nice human thing for a big company to do.
Maybe they want you to ask Gemini.
Yeah.
Maybe. Hey, Gemini, what is this thing?
Oh, no, your thing's going to talk to you.
Don't
do that. Don't do that.
Going again.
Jesus. We got through two shows with your phone not talking to you.
Okay, so moving from a fun story, happy Christmas, happy Hanukkah, happy Kwanzaa, happy everything to everybody. And now we have to jump away from that. Have a disclaimer. We say, Christine and I started in this business talking about the wonders of tech, really enjoying think about the concept of working in a world where information is free and available to everybody, and we all grow and benefit from it, but that's not the world we live and work in anymore. Now we have front row seats to how that world that, you know, we even help foster as it grew from its infancy, how it's turning into a kind of an awful place used to control rather than benefit people.
And this
we call this section The Abyss, you know.
Yeah, I was just saying Stories from the Abyss.
We got front row seats on it. We've had front row seats on watching the technology develop, and now we got front row seats on what the technologarchs want to do with it.
Yeah, so in this story, this is for H-1B visas, which we know affect people in our industry for sure. The State Department's, this is from Newsweek. The State Department's noticed that beginning December 15th, consular officers will conduct an online presence review for every H-1B applicant and their H-4 dependents. They have to bring them in line with MNJ student and exchange visa applications who are already subject to the scrutiny. But part of what they're going to do is they're going to make them take their social medias off private, put them on public, and then they're going to scroll through all their posts and photos and connections when deciding who gets a visa.
Well, so, not just who gets, this is going to be who keeps moving. They're working at the beginning with new applicants. This is going to be expanded to people who already have them.
Well, I don't, is that in this story? I don't see it in this story. I'm not saying it's probably true, but I didn't, and this story is just about the new ones on December 15th, but they've already been reviewing some people's. I know that. So you're right there. I don't know if they're opening up this much. Only suggestion to people is, you know, get a burner phone and just put limited connections and social in there. Because otherwise they're going through everything you've pretty much ever posted. And my accounts on Facebook is from like 2006 or something.
Yeah, it's pretty hard. It's pretty hard to scrub your previous life. And I'm not even sure it's possible to social media.
Yeah, it's not.
Scrub your previous life. But you do have to have, I mean, can you imagine trying to claim you're a H1 applicant and you don't have a social media profile? You don't even have a LinkedIn profile. I don't think that's gonna wash well.
No, you'd have to create another you. You deactivate your old profiles. And it'd have to be for a few months for all that stuff to disappear, and then you'd have to be creating a new you in the meantime. But anyway, that will be, if you have an H1B visa, your H1B visa is going to be subject to a large amount of scrutiny. So I would go to the State Department's website and go through everything that they say they need and want and check that in your life. Also make sure that your, you know, wife, husband, children are all scrubbed too, because otherwise they're going through all of that.
Yeah.
So that's just so invasive. As we said, stories from the abyss. There's no reason they need to be doing that. The process of vetting people for visas is already pretty strict. You don't need to go through everything they've ever said on social media.
Indeed, anyway, if you have
Jim went, I better stop now.
No, it's not a better stop now, honestly. It's not a better stop now. I can go
no,
on.
No, I'm just saying that's what I meant.
An hour.
That's what I meant. That's what I meant.
Yep, this is abuse of power. That is adjunct to fascism. State Department is saying U.S. visa is a privilege, not a right, which it is, of course. And everybody who got a H-1 visa, and everybody who came into the United States to, you know, do work-related things there, such as speak at conferences or visit clients, understood that the right to do that was a privilege. The ability to do that was a privilege. But to the State Department, from people who don't live in the United States, our participation in your economy is your privilege. You benefit from it. You make a lot of money from the ideas, information, innovation, and education that we bring into your country. And we want to do that because that's kind of where the international meeting and melting pot place was. But we don't want to do that anymore because you make it dangerous and hard and almost futile. So what are you doing?
And by the way, to end that conversation with just this piece, Las Vegas was down 6 million out of 10 million tourists expected last month.
Good.
And a lot of that is from, obviously, things like this. So,
I'm sorry to say good. Honestly, I'm sorry to say good. I don't want to see people just like me, except on another side of a border, suffer. But good. Because this is what because bad decisions have consequences. And I know most people, but you know what? At this point, the regime is the regime. Bad decisions have consequences. And I'm sorry good people are getting hurt. But good.
And speaking of bad decisions, to lead into an awkward changeover to Google stuff.
Okay, so if you think you got banned or hurt or lost ranking because of your AI content, and your solution is to take all your AI content and rewrite it with human content, that's not necessarily going to lead to recovery, because it's not necessarily why you got schlumped.
Well,
it might be, though.
Yeah, and also I knew a client who got a manual action for AI content. It was labeled as spam. Mm-hmm. And he rewrote all the content, and we got a reconsideration request in a week, and it said, you are good to go. And a year later, they had no traffic. They had never recovered. So, and we did, and everything that was in the spam could possibly be covered by spam was also fixed too. And it just didn't recover.
They give you the right to recover, not necessarily the recovery. That's the
exactly.
Thing. You're back in the playground, but you're kind of at the bottom of the greased pole, right?
Yeah. And this question came up on Reddit. John Mueller answered it there, but it's the question was, can a site with low quality AI content recover and be indexed if I rewrite everything manually and switch languages? I don't know why switch languages was a question, but it's just part of it. A while ago, I started a small niche, mostly as an experiment to see how AI content would perform with SEO. The content was low quality and mostly AI written in English. The site is not being indexed, crawled, currently not indexed, but he really likes the domain and spent a lot of time, so he kind of wants to see if he can recover it. And he asked John if it's possible, and does switching the content language matter? John's like, content matter, language doesn't matter. But he would say, I wouldn't think about it as AI or not, but the value of the site adds to the web. Just rewriting AI content by a human won't change that. It won't make it authentic. And I just had a conversation. I was interviewed on another podcast, and we're talking about the authenticity. And so, like, Jim, when you do content for clients of mine, I know you're going to add something that makes it unique and original. It doesn't have to be, you know, crazy, you know, never said before stuff. By unique, you just mean you can tell there's like a human tone to it, a human take on it.
You want to know what the secret is? It's my experience of whatever that thing is applied to as many people as I can possibly think of.
Exactly. So that's authenticity. So when he's saying just rewriting the AI content by a human won't change it, what I think he's trying to say, because it's always the devil in the details, is that if you just take the same content and rewrite it, you're not actually adding value to that content. And the reason the AI content may not be ranked or indexed, maybe because you're not adding anything to the conversation, because AI can only write what it was trained on. It can't go outside that. So if it has 100 million pages on chocolate cookies, it doesn't need your 100 million and one page on chocolate cookies if it doesn't add anything to the conversation. And I think that's what John is trying to point out here. So he says that you basically said, start over, think about the site's purpose and how you add value. And that's adding value, right? Is adding something new to the conversation.
Just to complicate what you said. And this goes back to something I think that you might have said like last week or a couple of weeks ago. We were talking about how AI has taken recipes and just completely screwed them up by mixing, munching a bunch of recipes together, because that's what sounds like should happen. And so your little note about cookies that you just mentioned right now is actually a lot more complicated than. If you do have a blog about 100,000, there's 100,000 different things about chocolate cookies, and you're adding one more thing to that. That one more thing you're adding is if it was written by AI originally and you're rewriting it, remember what you're rewriting is likely a mishmash of the 100,000 other things that people had already written.
Yeah, that's very true too.
So it may or may not be entirely true, and you're rewriting it and putting it out there thinking it's valuable to people out on the web. You're responsible for everything you publish, remember?
And I've talked about this before, but I think it's been a while. Google does have there's a patent on it, so people can look it up. There is an algorithm that looks at the entity comparison under a topical vector between documents it already trusts and knows and other documents. And I'm not saying that's being used for in this case, but could be for low quality content. And that is, if the AI can't write outside of what it was trained on, then it will have the same entities as every other entity in common entity in those documents in that topic. So it will say baking and someone does cookies, right? And then they compare those entities with trusted content. So sure, you may be sound okay to a human, but to them, they're like, well, you didn't say anything different, new. There's no new entity structures here. There's no new, nothing added to the conversation. So why should we add you? We already have 10 million pages on that. So you could be adding, like Jim said, you could be adding to the mishmash, or you could just be not adding anything that Google feels it needs to index. You know, I noticed in the last year, and I haven't tested and investigated this yet, so this is just my thinking right now, but there's a very few updates, but a lot of sites are complaining about crawled and not indexed. And I have a feeling that, and a lot of people got their content that was indexed back to the crawled, not indexed state. Mm-hmm. And I have a feeling Google's been doing subtle updates where they're moving you from indexed to crawled to not indexed when they determine that the content doesn't add value. And AI content straight out of the machine, Google has said, Gary, Danny, and John, that it is low quality content. And it's low quality because it doesn't add value. And what John's saying here is, of course, you have to add value. And John said, if you want to change all your site's content, I'd approach it essentially starting over with no content and consider what it is you want to do to the site, not as a checklist of pages you need to tweak manually. Start with the bad state will be harder than starting with the new domain and perhaps take longer. And we both know that's because Google can carry bad history with the domain. So you may make all the fixes, but Google's like, meh. We see a lot of bad history here. I had to tell a client that once because he kept messing up his site and he wasn't getting recoveries anymore for a long time. And I'm like, it's because the site's been messed up so much.
So you know, it's like an old house. Sometimes you just got to take it down to the bones and start from the studs and work your way up again.
With a new foundation, new domain, because the old domain has the bad history with it. And that history we know usually falls off after about 2 years, but you probably don't want to wait 2 years. So.
Okay. So moving along, this is actually kind of a funny one. So Google pulls the EU antitrust complaint against Microsoft. Google's dropping a EU antitrust complaint against Microsoft after an EU probe into Microsoft's licensing practices, the way it licenses Azure under the EU blocks really tough tech rules. What I think actually happened is, you know, the EU Trade Commission studied the way that Azure and Microsoft Amazon Web Services fall under the Digital Marketing Act, and then they looked at what Google does. And then somebody walked over to Google and says, "Hey, like, are you serious? Do you really want to go? Are you serious? You want to go forward?" And so Google like slumped away and said, "Yeah, we're done." That's where I think.
Yeah, but I think so too. Because how many antitrust suits has Google had in the EU in the last 2 years that we've covered that they lost? So yeah, you're probably right. It doesn't state that directly in the article, but it implies it.
Well, what it's worth. Okay, so Google's accusing Microsoft of using restrictive software licensing, making cloud computing less attractive. Now, I mean, anyone listening to the show understands the Googleverse. Anyone who uses Google Docs and who pays for Google Workspace understands how vast that is and how expensive it gets. And so they have a vested interest in people being interested in cloud computing. Microsoft, on the other hand, is selling like development level access through Azure. And it's really selling security. So ultimately, Google's case loses merit when you realize that there's a good reason why it's insanely restrictive licensing for what Microsoft's doing.
Microsoft is insanely restrictive licensing all the way since like 2000, never.
Well, in this instance, most certainly.
Here's Google's final statement on it in search engine land. We filed our antitrust complaint to give voice to our customers and partners, said Georgia Abeltino, Google Cloud Europe's head of public policy. I'm sure I butchered that name. I apologize. She added that Google still stands behind the concerns range because Google always files antitrust cases just to give voice to their customers and partners.
Yes.
Yes. Well, I think you're right. What happened?
You know, if he can, do.
Yes.
If you can't, slink out of the room real quietly as if nobody noticed.
Exactly.
Okay. So
this is a big one. This is like shaking up all the internet this week.
Oh, indeed. This could well have been our biggest story of the week, except it's still developing and we don't exactly know where it's going to go. And there's also so many dimensions to it. Number one, if you are in the ChatGPT universe, it's code red at ChatGPT. Google Gemini 3, Nano Banana Pro, etc., is such a leap forward in the Googleverse that the people in the open AI ChatGPT-averse are real concerned.
Yeah, they even put a halt on ads. Remember last week we told them ads was coming?
Well, and this week, at the beginning of this week, Altman was talking about the introduction of ads. Like in the last couple of days, suddenly that's off the table. And yeah, obviously they're very nervous.
Well, yeah, according to the article in Search Engine Land, which has a pretty good overview of it, it says the title is OpenAI hits pause on ChatGPT ads as CEO declares code red. They're feeling the heat from Google. You know, Google has the ability to, you know, take over this market. It has the platform, it has the infrastructure, it has the money. OpenAI doesn't have the money. They're burning, what is it, $50 billion a day or something? Not billion, must be a million, but still, it's an insane amount of money.
And any money that OpenAI has now is investor money, not earned money. Google choosing earned money.
Yeah, exactly.
Google can burn that money because they're going to make it back a month in next quarter through their ad revenues. So they can burn as much as they want. ChatGPT, on the other hand, that's people's money.
Yeah, that's a really good way of putting it. Our next article is related to this one. It's from Business Insider. OpenAI is feeling the heat from Google right now for a good reason. So they said he declared a code red. Google did the same when ChatGPT came on, if everyone remembers that. And but what they're saying is that they're losing their edge, OpenAI is, that Google's new models are so good that Salesforce CEO Mark Benioff recently said he's ditching ChatGPT in favor of Gemini 3 because Gemini's insane improvement. I'm going to say it with a little caveat here. Holy shite, Benioff, I didn't say the real word. Wrote on X last month, I've used ChatGPT every day for 3 years, just spent 2 hours on Gemini 3. I'm not going back. The leap is insane. Reasoning, speed, images, video, everything is sharper and faster. It feels like the world changed again. And then Google launched Nano Banana Pro, the AI image generator. And I've seen videos on this about how it's so realistic. I just said, you know, that you can't tell the difference between AI and it. But Altman's code red is because, like you said, Google's advertising cash cow can fund its AI, while OpenAI faces a $1.4 trillion bill.
Oh, no. Who, from who?
From themselves, from everything they've been doing.
Oh.
From all the money, everything they've been investing. Yeah.
Well, if they just owe it to themselves, well then.
Yeah, no, I mean, they owe it to other people, obviously. But they this is over 8 years, but this is what Altman has been talking about, that they are going to invest $1.4 trillion and they expect, you know, that's when they can make the money back. I don't know how that's going to happen. They're not making the money now. But it's not, according to this article, the next title is OpenAI has a head start, but Google has a platform advantage. And that's really the difference, right? Like you just said, they're using other people's money. They're not really making money. They're burning money. Google's like, hey, we got ad revenue. We'll just find a new way to tweak the ads and make up the money to make the difference.
Remember, Google has a Googleverse, and it can insert Gemini 3 anywhere it wants to insert it. You want it in your docs. You want it in your sheets. You want it in your search results. Do you want advertising with that? We can do that too. ChatGPT, on the other hand, people have to subscribe to it directly. It's just ChatGPT. It's not your email service. It's not your search service or anything, although you can do search on it. You see where I'm saying? Like anything ChatGPT wants to get itself into, it's got to make a deal with. Google, on the other hand, just inserts it because it already owns it.
Yeah, that's true. And also OpenAI, they're saying, has also issues with compute and energy bottlenecks. So
they don't own the reactors, do they?
Exactly. OpenAI executives say compute constraints are holding back other initiatives like making ChatGPT Pulse, a personalized update feature with chatbot for pro users available to everyone. So there's a bunch of initiatives they want to do that they can't because they just don't have the compute. It's so insanely expensive. I don't think people, you know, as regular folks, we can really understand when they say $100 billion, $200 billion, $1 trillion investment, how much money that really is.
Yeah.
But that they need more money for the compute. That's why he estimated $1.4 trillion. But they're not making money. They're not making revenue. They're burning so much money. Even what they make doesn't, you know, just barely covers that. So we'll see. But it does look like Google has taken a huge step forward and if people start going to Google instead of ChatGPT, like you said, it's in everything they want to put it in. They can make it an add-on anywhere they want to. So you know, might win this race. Yeah, but we'll see. Everything could change tomorrow.
When I eventually write the article about all of this, November 2022 is the Pearl Harbor moment, and ChatGPT is like Japan and Yamato, understanding that if they just absolutely wipe out the behemoth right now, maybe the behemoth will slink off and we'll be able to take over.
Yeah.
But instead of slamming and destroying the behemoth right now, they instead woke it up. And when they did, all that industrial might and all of that insane industrial foundation, the infrastructure, came to bear, and the results were inevitable.
Because I always wonder, because I have a favorite, I'm such a geek, I have a favorite research article. I don't remember the exact title, but something like Turning Debutantes into Dilettantes and Dilettantes into Debutantes. I found it around 2018 when I was doing research on a BERT talk. And that's what OpenAI used. The revolution from BERT wasn't for SEOs. It was for the natural language processing industry, the academics, because it cut down costs, because you could predict a word in a sentence as opposed to having to just read it one direction and know everything that was in it and understand it, right? So it really, really made these huge advances. And that's what Altman used, that research article, and that advance to start ChatGPT. So Google was, everyone's like, Google's so behind. I'm like, he used the tech that Google already invented and the paper they wrote in 2018. So he's not behind, but they weren't apparently caught up. But now they're the ones who invented the process, right? They're the ones who had the academics and the researchers who invented what became ChatGPT. So they were the base of all that. So I always wondered how they're going to outcompete Google, because all Google would have to do is put more resources on advancing that technology, since now it was competitive, which is what they did.
You know, the first people who were innovative enough to land a plane on a ship were?
No.
The Americans.
Oh, okay.
Real dumb to hit them and try to, you know what I mean? Like, just the level of innovation. And then, so you know what this week was? The last this period, this is midway, when suddenly the tide has turned, and I think honest to goodness, Gemini is now going to be the leader moving forward in just about every case, and it's Sam Altman has his own damn self to blame.
Yeah, and if you have the head of Salesforce who had integrated ChatGPT in Salesforce, saying that they're never going back, they're probably going to also, I would assume, turn the company over to Gemini.
Bellwether, eh?
Yeah, because I mean, he doesn't usually speak off the cuff that way. If he's so impressed with just a week worth of using it that he'll never go back to ChatGPT, that's a massive statement coming from the head of Salesforce, CEO of Salesforce. So we'll see what happens. But I do think OpenAI may be struggling here in the near future.
Well, okay. Last thing on this story, I actually wanted to jump to the Pichai story, but I read something on Reddit like just before we went to air, so can't totally substantiate it. But I understand that on anything except the pro accounts, they've turned memory off. So ChatGPT for many of its users is no longer doing what they really prized it doing, remembering their previous conversations and building on them.
Oh, that's interesting. I wonder if that's a result of the lawsuits of the people that committed suicide.
It could be a number of things. I think it's money and storage.
That too. I definitely could be part of it.
Okay. And by the way, if that is true, that's also a sign that they're in trouble, because that's one of the core things that made them.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. They need money for compute, and they don't have it.
Okay, so if you want to get a message to Sundar Pichai. He's sold us out.
You're gonna hate this one.
Really want the CEO of Google to understand how you feel about something, go to X on launch day. That's almost like he did a commercial for Elon Musk here, right? But if you really want to get to him, apparently Sundar Pichai monitors the X on launch days for feedback on Google products and how people think about them.
So if you really dislike something and you have an X account, go find the Google account that announced it and start talking.
Yep.
It is. I know, Jim, I hate to do the story because I know your feelings on X and they are valid. So, but, you know, it is a good time for people to get their word in when they're making changes that we find that aren't functional, like, hey, taking people's the traffic, you know, for publishers and stuff. So anyway.
Although I think everybody should do that over at Blue Sky using the hashtag Sundar Pichai look here. UX look here. I think honestly you should do that. Stop Nazis while you can.
So while we're on the subject of Blue Sky, I'm gonna just skip ahead just a little bit here and just cover that story real quick. Mm-hmm. Blue Sky is crashing and it has lost I believe 59% of its traffic in a year.
Yeah.
Which makes sense though. I've tried Blue Sky, I wanna love it. But the engagement on there is just difficult. There's just, it's 39%, sorry, not 59%, 39.8% year over year. But I want to love it, but I just can't. It's just like, there's no way to get real engagement and conversation going. And then you have to find everything. And you have to create all these like category topics. And it just doesn't have a flow. And if they could fix that problem, they'd probably blast off into, you know, the stratosphere. But right now their engagement issue is just what's killing them. Everyone I talk to who doesn't really use it anymore is the same thing. There's just no real good way to get engagement on it.
The problem with I think Blue Sky is just nobody's putting anything outrageous. Things that go up there are things that, you know, it's a very intelligent platform. Things that go up there are things that intelligent people are sharing, but we're not sharing them to piss each other off or to drive clicks.
Yeah, but I don't even think it's
drive that. Outrage. And so
I don't see anything. I just don't see stuff, and they don't see mine. Like there's no engagement factor. Well, I don't mean like clicks and stuff. I just mean literally people don't see posts unless you already have 50,000 followers or something.
Yeah, I was about to say Blue Sky hasn't. You're right. They haven't figured out engagement because they haven't figured out how to push information to anyone on the.
Yes.
They want users to have that. They want users to have the choice. They don't want to be. Like X or Facebook or any of the social media that went before them where, you know, an algorithm pushed stuff on you and then eventually, you know, as algorithms do, starts pushing debtorous stuff.
Yeah, but they can make algorithms that didn't push the outrage clickbait stuff. It's just there's no easy way. And when I go into every other social platform, I have a For You feed that funnels me stuff I'm interested in. And I can also look at it without being funneled on some of the platforms, but it's just the way to do it, right? So you can look at the funnel or not look at the funnel. But the fact that there's no engagement, it's like I'm talking to like early Twitter when you like post stuff, but you didn't know if anybody ever saw it. That's what it feels like on Blue Sky.
Mm-hmm. Investors seem to be voting for engagement. But in weird sorts of ways. And this might hurt people's brains, okay? Investors look at hype and look at what they think can come of an idea, especially in this sort of realm. Meta stocks have jumped on reports that Mark Zuckerberg wants to make really deep cuts to Facebook and Instagram so they can invest in the metaverse budget. So yes, investors are
30% across the board.
So investors are looking at a future for Meta that doesn't involve the old social media. It involves a 3D version, very immersive. What's the word I'm looking for? My goodness.
You know, the thing is like,
virtual reality. There we are.
Yeah. But the thing is like, this feels like just a Zuckerberg insistence project, because like it's been since 2022 and they lost $4.4 billion and only have $470 million in sales during September, ending the third quarter, not September but the third quarter, and then they're cutting like they lost Lassoon from the AI people. Of course they've also done a lot of things that he may have moral objections to, but so it's just
their
a weird time to like
be. It's been twofold.
Yeah.
The biggest problem they had has been solved. Was electricity processing capacity. That's kind of been solved by the AI revolution. Well, the electricity problem hasn't been solved, but everyone needs
electricity. But they're buying 3 nuclear reactors. So yes.
Indeed. So the ramping up and throwing like just going nuts on creating power. That's become the norm. A few years back, it was not the norm. That was still a problem for people. The other problem that they face, and what actually might be an even bigger one, is how do you immerse people in this environment? It requires goggles, big, thick, clunky, ugly goggles that you can't wear while you're driving. You can't wear them in public.
And they also make people yourself sick. In this
universe. You and you look silly.
And they make people sick. They make a lot of people sick. They give them vertigo.
Okay. Well, yeah. I'm sure it's that. I think is something people could get used to over time if they absolutely had to, like being on a boat or flying. But yeah, that's a very real consideration too. But this metaverse, I mean, until the Meta glasses get accepted and start having a way to transport you into the 3D representation, the virtual reality representation of stuff, like, you know, how do you get people there?
Yeah, and also because they're expensive, you know, until they can bring the costs way down. And then in addition, just pointing to Meta in general, this points to the larger issue of the layoffs, because there's layoffs coming in January for Facebook. Meta, I'm sorry, I keep calling it Facebook. It's because they're cutting staff, not because AI is replacing staff, but because of the investments in AI. It's like AWS just had that massive cut in the white collar sector of the, you know, the company. And that was so they can invest in AI. And that's the same reason they're doing this here at Meta. They're going to lay off 30 or they're going to cut costs by 30%. And they're going to lay off thousands of workers to keep investing in this product that just loses money and hasn't made real revenue. So it's kind of a weird time, because normally in the past, like, because we're big old capitalists, if you've been doing something for like 3, 4, 5 years and it's losing billions of dollars, you don't keep going with that project. But we're investing hundreds of billions of dollars, $1 trillion, $1.4 trillion for OpenAI and stuff that makes no money.
They're recreating the world.
They think, yes.
Oh, that's exactly. They are recreating the world and the way in which we do learn and experience everything. And it will be controlled by a very small cabal of people. And if you don't think this is worth a moonshot worth of funding from their point of view, remembering that they are all billionaires, or in one case, a trillionaire, who have extracted all this wealth from you, me, everybody else, over the last 25 years, they absolutely believe they are creating a new world for people to live in. Musk can't go to Mars anymore. That ain't going to happen. I think he realizes that. But this whole new way of thinking, or in many cases, not having to think, is something they are creating and will be bringing to the world, whether any of us like it or not. Made changes to Facebook, and we
are paying for it. At some point, they do have to make money on it. I mean, they can't lose that much money forever. So
indeed,
but you're right. That is their intent. And people look up TechNates. That is the intent of the TechNates.
They have more money than Kronos. They can lose money much longer than you think they can. Really, they're building a new universe in which everything will be done. The payoff for it is so extraordinarily big that the investment will be big too. For them. Oh, not for you. Not for me. Not for the people. Yeah. I got about 400 people driving past me every few minutes on a very busy street. None of them are going to benefit from this revolution. They're all
going to be said, and it depends on people actually buying into it. And so far, they're not. So we'll see.
Oh, people are buying into it. Oh my God, people are buying into it. People are buying into it all over the place. Absolutely.
Not Meta.
Not spending money on it. Oh, because Meta hasn't crossed those bridges. Well, they have. The electricity bridge, they've got. The immersive bridge, they haven't.
Topic, move on.
They will. Okay.
So if you like Meta, real quick, if you like Meta's Messenger app on desktop, you will no longer have access after December 14th. And on Windows, it stops on December 14th. On Mac, it stops 60 days after the start of deprecation. I hate using the in-browser Messenger chat. I like the app, so I'm really kind of not happy this is going away. But you won't have it to use anymore. And if you try to use it, they'll redirect you to the browser. I do wonder what this does with the supposed encryption. Because now you're in a browser, and I don't know if they can encrypt from the browser. They can encrypt. I know they can encrypt from the app. So keep an eye on that thing at the top of your messenger that says this talk chat is encrypted, and see if it's still there. Don't rely on that encryption being there after they force you to the browser. It might be, but we don't know.
As of 10 days from now. So as of like next Saturday, it's gone.
Yes, yes. And you have to turn on Secure Storage. Okay, here it does say in the article from Digital Trends, to turn on Secure Storage and set a PIN, go to Settings, Privacy, Safety, End-to-End Encrypted Chat. So you will have to enable the end-to-end encrypted chats, which I'm sure a lot of people are relying on right now, given where we are in this timeline. So make sure that you set that up when it moves you to the browser. Sorry, I wanted to make sure people knew, because it's just going to go away. And like,
no worries. You know what? That yeah. dovetails in with the story earlier that they're making massive cuts to the Facebook/Instagram world so that they can bring the metaverse to bear.
Yeah, I have a feeling when I saw it happen, because I got the message yesterday, I assumed they were doing budget cuts, but I didn't realize how big they were. So yeah.
Okay.
I agree. Yeah.
So Google or Bing is testing a search bar with advanced tools menus.
Yeah, so like Google has the tool menu, and when you search from the, and you do a search, and you see in the upper right, there's tools there. They're adding tools themselves. They're adding search with your voice, search with an image, and make an image to their functions. I tell you, I'm liking Bing more and more, and more that Google wants to force us into AI mode, the more and more I'll probably wind up using Bing, because I have no need to be forced into AI mode.
Okay. So it is the time of year end listicles. I got my Spotify listicle. Apparently I listen to a lot of punk rock several years running too. Google's released its listicles, top searches, in the US, top searches, globally.
By the way, I need to really quick specify, cause this is in the Search Engine Land article, that this isn't top searches or most search terms, even though it sounds like it. This is trending queries. So these are queries that trended over the year.
Top 10. Oh, okay. You're right. Top 10
trending top search queries.
Trending yeah. Google search queries of 2025 in the United States were Charlie Kirk, K-pop Demon Hunters,
La Boo Boo.
Sorry. iPhone 17, One Big Beautiful Bill Act, Zoran Mandani, DeepSeek, Government Shutdown, FIFA Club World Cup, and Tariffs. You want to do the globals?
Yeah, globally, Gemini, India versus England, Charlie Kirk, Club World Cup, India versus Australia, DeepSeek, Asia Cup, Iran, iPhone 17, Pakistan, and India. I assume the India versus England and Australia was soccer or cricket?
Cricket, absolutely cricket.
Yeah, yeah. And then we have a bunch of others, and it's just too much to go through. But if you want to read the whole list, it is in Search Engine Land, Google's Year in Search 2025. These trending topics spiked big.
Okay. I like listicles like this. They're fun.
They're fun. Yeah. It's fun to see what people looked at here and around the world. You notice the US had, probably because of the year we've had, very few international queries. Where there probably would have been more in the past.
The difference between the two was actually kind of stark. I noticed that there was very little crossover between what the rest of the world's interested in and what the United States is interested in.
It's kind of exactly. Scary, it is a little scary. Yeah.
I hate to beat this one to death, but you know what bugs me about these lists?
What's that?
The year's like there's 1/12 of the year to go. That's a big amount of stuff to measure. Where does Mariah Carey fit in all this?
And it is Whamageddon time of year.
Not yet. No way. Don't even make me think it.
For all those playing, I'm still in.
Yeah, if you haven't heard it yet, you haven't heard it. Don't even get it as an earworm.
Oh.
That's like saying Macbeth in a theater.
So moving on to more AI stuff, because that dominates everything these days. Google Search Console is testing AI power configuration to create dynamic reports. This isn't Search Engine Land. And it will basically, you're going to be able to prompt Search Console to give you responses to things you want to know about your data. And you can is designed to streamline your analysis by handling three key elements for you: selecting metrics, applying filters, and configuring comparisons. The rollout is a bit slow. They say they're doing it limited to begin with. Limitations is designed for configuration, so filter comparison metrics. You cannot perform actions like sorting the table or exporting data. Scope, it supports only a performance report for search results. Accuracy can be not good because it's AI. My only concern about this, Jim, is first, there's so many more other things I'd prefer they added, but your client's going to go in there and start asking questions.
My client's going to go around and start asking it questions, and then it's going to start like funking the output that comes later. You just smell it coming.
No, yeah, it's going to be like, I checked this, and why is this like this? And you're like, that's incorrect, or that doesn't matter, or
yeah. And so, let me try to explain this. Okay, you're already hitting the dial button. Okay.
Sometimes you don't want to make data analysis too simple. You want the people who understand the data analysis to be doing it.
Now, for what it's worth, it'll probably be running a couple of days behind.
That's true too. why do we have no traffic? It's just Google. It's not us. We're good. So
Google Discover has gained AI mode features.
It's just doing AI mode stuff. You can do with you can use from the drop down menu. Mm-hmm. So you can do summarize with AI mode, ask a follow up with AI mode, dive deeper with AI mode while you're in Discover. So nothing crazy. Just adding it wherever they can put it, like we talked about already.
Okay, Google is updating how it shows events within AI Overviews. Can show the direct display of events instead of a summary.
Yeah.
A bit wonky.
Looks like a featured snippet, basically. So, which is better than it's the old way, because now it's just like a featured snippet. It's like, here's the events today, and here's a list of them. And before it was, here's an extraordinarily long bit of text that has no organization to it and doesn't really help me. So I think this is a positive change to the display, and it's a smaller display. So that's good for the people that want to get clicks.
Okay. This is kind of complicated, and it may seem counterintuitive, but new usability testing is showing that AI mode doesn't kill high-value clicks. Users still visit websites when it's really important, like when they're choosing doctors, dentists, when they're choosing complicated services. AI mode, okay, so I've been telling my clients this too. There's some clicks are useful to you, and some clicks are just people kicking tires or looking for information. The one that's really useful to you is the one that converts, the one that does the action you want them to do, brings you, you know, the benefit you want, makes a purchase off you. But the ones that are just like kicking tires, you're supporting their traffic and paying for their traffic, but it's not really paying for you.
Well, and just to clarify here, these are on transactional searches. So again, informational is still suffering greatly. This is just when they have to make a decision and go to your website to finalize it.
So again, you want to make a doctor's appointment, you've got to do it at the doctor's website, dentist, and again, other personal services like that. Or if you want to purchase like a jacket, you got to go to the store's website to purchase said jacket. So 86, again, with transactional searches, 69% of AI mode visitors, users actually visited a website. That resulted, 69% of AI mode sessions resulted in a click to a website. And that's a pretty good click-through rate, eh?
Yeah, I mean, it's not fantastic, but it's definitely far better than what informational sites are experiencing, because the journey has to be completed on your site. Also, people should remember there are no rankings. I saw someone writing about rankings again in AI mode and AI overview. The citations are not ranked. There's no ranking. They're bringing them back based on matching the query to the content on, you know, that they have or they're producing. And it's about quality of site, right? Not necessarily ranking. SEO factor is big on quality, but there's not ranking. So there's no number one spot, technically.
Yep. People are just confusing, like, where, I mean, something has to appear. When you're putting like stacking results on top of each other, something has to appear on top of it. People are thinking that's the ranking. You know what I mean? They got to put the results somewhere. And just because it appears here above somebody else's doesn't mean that it's necessarily cited above somebody else's. It probably just came up earlier in the article.
Yeah. And also the way that they bring back the citations can change. So Jim and I could put in the same prompt and we'd get different citations. Some would be similar, but some could be vastly different, because it brings back a lot more citations to ground the writing than we see. Because Google Lab originally would show you all of them, and there'd be like 100 there, which they could never show because that would confuse people, right? So just, you know, there's no ranking. And people are clicking on more than one. I do that. If I get an AI overview that I'm interested in, I'll click on the websites to find the information, make sure it's real. So I usually click on two or three of those. And it's 3.7 was the average in this study. And 16% of users relied on above the fold content to just make their decision. That's normal.
That's normal.
Yeah, that's normal. Most people don't scroll. That's the thing. So if you want important information, make sure it's above the fold. Photos don't seem to matter a whole lot, but reviews are everything. So in this, 21% of users viewed photos attached to the Google business profile. But like even for the Botox tax that they gave them to look up a Botox person, the number only rose 24%. Social proof was the big driver, which is reviews. Reviews are huge for me when I'm doing anything like doing a local service.
That kind of backs up another finding of the study that's, and I kind of like this. Only 27% of users felt ready to make a purchase decision based solely on what they saw in the AI summary. So that means people are using, to me, that means AI people are using the AI summaries or AI overview or AI mode as a starting point, getting a bit of knowledge, but they understand they don't know enough. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah, exactly. So, and that's how I thought it might work for services or when you're purchasing something, because you don't want to rely on just an overview. So that's good to know. Like, review is huge for everything. Yeah. So that's a good study. It's good to know. If you're in a transactional space, you're probably still doing pretty good with AI mode and AI overview.
Okay. So you remember how we were talking earlier about, you know, massive investments in AI infrastructure and, you know, pulling money out of one project and putting into AI projects or the metaverse projects or whatever. And we were also talking about how Google has, you know, just established, it was establishing this lead over ChatGPT. Sam Altman might be unhappy to hear that Google's working on a new Gemini app user experience, it's calling 2.0. Company's putting a massive amount of time, money, human energy into this update. It's going to be released eventually. Product lead in Google AI Studio, Logan Kilpatrick, said over Thanksgiving, huge investment happening in Gemini app UX 2.0 right now. Hoping we win you over with this iteration. Josh Woodward and the team are working on it. And Josh Woodward is the VP at Google Labs, Gemini and AI Studio at Google. So, yeah, not a good day to be Sam Altman.
Can I read what prompted this post, though, from Logan Kilpatrick at Google?
Yeah.
Reza Martin wrote, I'm sorry to say this, but most of what stops me from switching from the ChatGPT app to Gemini today is literally the front end. And I know Google will do anything but front end engine work. But that's funny. We know for years that they didn't really do a whole lot of front end development work, but they have now for a long time. But it's just, I thought it was funny.
Ever since Marissa left.
Yeah. So, So you're right. You know, the thing is that now that Gemini has leaps and bounds, according to, you know, as we said, the head of Salesforce, and according to a lot of what I've read in the AI industry on LinkedIn, OpenAI may have a hard time catching up. As like you said, Google has all the power infrastructure. All they have to do is move resources around the company. You know, they're not looking for funding to do this. And Altman has claimed he needs $1.4 trillion in funding to do what he needs to do over the next 10 years. So. And oh, by the way, we didn't mention, and I have not gotten in depth into it, so I cannot tell you a lot about it yet, but Google has done this on its own chips. Chips that are not expensive.
It is that's right too. Yeah, yeah.
Take inexpensive chips and supplant the NVIDIA chip. So it doesn't need the expensive NVIDIA chip. So it also is going to overpower AI. It's going to have the ability, at least, to do far more compute on far less money than OpenAI can at this time. Yeah. Which we know from the story before is already bottlenecking them, the lack of compute power, or the ability to add to compute power, I should say.
Okay, so this one is a little weird and hard to explain. It's going to get a little bit weirder as we go along trying to explain it.
And it's funny.
It's no, it's funny, but there's something here that I can't put my finger on, okay?
Oh, well, I saw the discussion online, so I'll add to that because I think that might resolve it for you.
No, the Utah A discussion online, the Utah discussion between the people who actually put it up and why they put it up and everything.
No, but John Mueller.
Okay. So Google has been rightly saying that no AIs respond to LLMs text files. Now, people might want to conduct their own experiments and make it an outrageous experiment, so it's not a causation versus is causality sort
And
of
also,
thing.
by the way, I need to interject real quick right there. People have seen the crawlers crawl these, but according to John in the discussion on Twitter, I think it was, because I wasn't on Blue Sky, or maybe it was LinkedIn, said that they crawl them because they're there, but they don't do anything with them. That's the difference. So if you're going to test, you have to make sure they're doing something with them, not just that they're calling them.
Well, and remembering this will be looked at as a supporting file, not an active file. It's not a web file at all. It's not something that's meant to go, be presented to the public. It's meant to instruct the browser and the crawler into how to treat the information. But as Christine said, they don't follow these directives, and it's not safe for an AI crawler to follow directives it might find in LLM text, because somebody might put really malicious directives in there if they were
Yes, as we
to follow
know,
them.
yes, with invisible prompt injection.
But guess what people
Well,
found over at developers? The URLs become important here, okay? So check this out. Developers.google.com/search/docs/llms.txt.
by the way, if you go there right now, it is no longer
Currently,
there.
you'll find a 404. Before, you found a whole mess, and I'm talking a whole mess of LLM.txt documents. It was like, it's exactly what they did. They took every Google developer's page and explained exactly what it was for the LLMs with a very tight, succinct. And one thing I noticed about this LLM text document, those would have made really, really good description statements. Meta description statements. Every last one of them would have been a beautiful little meta description statement, but I digress. If you go over to developers.google.com/search/docs, etc., you'll get a 404. However, if you go to developer.chrome.com/docs/llms.txt, you will see a whole mess, and I mean a whole mess of LLM text.
Yes, I did. The discussion I had that I told you about, you wouldn't have seen because I just remembered where I saw it. It was Pedro at Google. Pedro used to work at Google on LinkedIn. I had the conversation on LinkedIn. You do not do LinkedIn. So, what he was saying is, as we already know, and I don't know if it's commonly known, and I don't know if we've talked about it here much, but a lot of those like developer docs that we read for our assistants are not written by Google, they're written by third parties. And so Pedro's theory on this is that there was a third party because that's usually who handles this kind of stuff. And they decided to do it. And that's why it was immediately removed on discovery. So.
Well, there has to be two third parties. One of them is at Chrome, developer.chrome.com. The other was at developer.google.com. These are different domains, different places.
Yeah, but it could all be done by third parties. Like I said, I was like shocked to find out like our Google Doc information, like on CWVs, maybe totally written by a third party. So it just could be another third party that was involved, but that's just what his theory is. He doesn't know for sure, but he was thinking that's probably why that happened. But
So you're
Google is still
saying
saying they know
third
what you're
party
doing.
just put this up on their own volition,
Yeah.
and
Yeah.
Google's just finding out now?
Yeah, I mean, it's possible. I mean, if it's a third party, it's given access to work on part of the site.
Yeah,
You
and it
did
could have
know
been up
that.
for hours before it became news, like only
Yeah, it could
mere
be.
hours, mere minutes before it became news. That's true.
Exactly, because we're an investigative kind of industry.
But while we're here, while we're talking about this, are you looking at the document developer.chrome.com docs llm.txt?
I was looking at the screenshot. I wasn't on the actual.
Well, check out the document itself and tell me these aren't really tight little description statements. I mean, honestly,
Oh,
it's a
the.
great little meta description.
Yeah, when I looked at it yesterday, I saw that. I
I'd be
think it would
proud
be
to write
cool to
that.
go through it and see like what it said, you know? So
Yeah, why are you doing this? What's the intent? What are you trying to do? Honestly, what they're trying to do is explain the page. That's simple as that. This is what
exactly,
this page
yeah.
is about, and we want you to relate it to this URL, to this URI.
Exactly. So very interesting. I don't think they're using them though. There's it just isn't really a reason, and it doesn't work. I think a lot of people think it works like a robots text file, but it doesn't. It's like
Well,
what you want to include in it, not what you
that same function can be accomplished in the head of every individual document.
exactly. Yeah, exactly. Well, if they follow it, but yes.
Well, I mean, we know that the crawlers look at all meta information found in the head of documents of every document on your page. Like that's the
That's
they act
true.
like a
Yeah.
crawler, act like a crawler, right? So
Yeah, that's
why
true.
not put that meta information in there? And it strikes me if you put that kind of descriptive information specifically for an LLM in the head of your document, there has to be a way to frame it that adds safety guardrails, so that you can't write some malicious statement. There has to be some framing that the LLMs could all agree to pay attention to, saying, you know what I mean?
Could be, but I don't think they see there's a reason for it. It's probably the reason.
Well, just again, our job is to ultra clarify the context, topic, and context of any given object or document on the web, right? So this is a way to do it.
Yeah, it's true. It's just right now they're not. I don't think they could
Associate
all.
this idea with this URL. Doom, doom,
I
is
just
what
don't
I'm
think they
thinking.
could. Honestly, I don't think they could get together to do the same protocol. I mean, look at Index Now has been out by Bing for what, 2 years or more now, and it's still not officially in Google.
Yeah, well, yeah, indeed.
Yeah.
If they
And
could, it would. But you know what? It's also possibly technically impossible, because how do you get an LLM to listen to one instruction but not another?
yeah, that's true
And
too.
how do you, of all the gajillions of people out there writing stuff, how do you account for every way of phrasing something malicious?
Oh, you can't, as we know from invisible prompt injections. So,
So I don't know if LLM, again, every time I think about LLM text, I think of how useful this will be, but how could this possibly happen?
no, you're right. It's a very good point that because of invisible prompt injections, which we know is a huge problem, that you couldn't use an LLM, because if you had LLM text, because then you could put anything you want in there, it wouldn't know the difference, and you could tell it to do all sorts of things. So I agree. Yeah, that's a really good point why they probably can't do it.
ChatGPT, don't forget previous instruction. Honest to God, we told you that for a reason, damn it.
Exactly.
Okay, so AI backs undermines match type control.
Yeah, so I put this in here because remember a couple of weeks ago we were saying how AI Max was like really performing badly. It was like one, it was like by large percentages compared to other types of ads. And apparently, AI Max will, this is an article in Search Engine Land, AI Max quietly turns all keywords into broad match and blurs the reporting, making it hard to even see what's going on and what's driving the results. So, so you could have set things to not be broad match. And for those who don't do ads, that means like what you think it is. It's like match everything that looks like kind of like this, right? Which means you can waste a lot of money on your advertisements. So broad match. So when AI Max thinks that it isn't a right fit, it just changes it and it doesn't let you know that. And then it's hard to see what it did and what the intent is. And so if you're using AI Max, be really careful and read. There's a lot to this article that's a little bit too much for us to get into, but it's AI Max undermines match type control. It's at Search Engine Land, but it'll tell you what it's doing and how it's overriding the match types, the mystery bucket that comes from this related to keywords, and how it's not always finding new queries that even though that's what it's supposed to be doing. But it'll take credit for existing ones. It sounds like it's kind of just a mess.
Well, is this the kind of thing that you might want to use, say, to do all the autofill so you don't got to do all that data input yourself and then go and inspect it line by line by line by line? Would that be a useful use? But if
No, I
so, why
think
don't you
it.
just input yourself, eh?
No, this is like once it's live, the ad's live, it does changes it.
You
It
know,
does.
change, yeah, and then it does like on spot analysis and stuff. So set and forget is an impossibility. You can't do that because
No, not with AI Max. Apparently has a, from what we know, from what we've reported before, it has a lot of issues. The AI is very imperfect, as we know most AI is. And by the way, I hate that we call it AI because it's large language models and it's different from like real AI, but anyway.
can you, but what I'm asking is, can you turn it on and then use it as an active assistant where you're constantly editing it? It as you would a live assistant, constantly keeping up with what they're doing, marshaling their efforts, directing them, and basically, can you manage it?
It doesn't sound like you can. Neither you or I are ad experts, so I don't want to get too
No,
deep into
indeed.
that.
Yeah.
But you have to fix it. Like it says, a recommended fix is add broad match versions of your core keywords to restore clean reporting. Like you have to do weird things. So I don't know that AI Max is. You should people should read the article on how ineffective it was compared to other ad types in search engine links. We did an article on that, but I don't remember the specifics. I just remember the difference was like double-digit percentages in conversions and efficiency. So just be careful if you're using AI Max. Read everything you can about it in the industry journals and decide if it's the right one for you, because it sounds like it just has a lot of issues that can cost you and your client money, and not good money,
Indeed.
not conversions.
Again, I think people see AI and they're like, well, you know, it's intelligence, set it and go away. Set and forget never works in the advertising in the paid ad world.
No, and the people we know that have a lot of experience really hate these AI additions because they find it costs their clients more than they could do it on their own. I'm sure people that don't have ad experience who are trying to get into using ads probably find it very helpful, but that's just because they don't know that they could be saving money if they had somebody who had a lot of experience and could be doing the ads for them. So.
Okay. Google's got a new feature yet you might find in Google Ads. It's called at the products at this location. Now, in some cases, products mightn't be products, they might be services, but they are offered by the person who engaged the ad. So clothing store, it might, you know, have the type of product that you're looking for at this store. So product at this location. Say it's a service business, a lawyer's office wants a set of products and might have the type of service areas or types of law that the lawyer practices. So there you go.
Yeah, it's just weird that it's called products. Anthony Hagman brought that up to Ginny, ad liaison at Google, and Barry mentioned it as well. And she just said it's relatively new and they're going to share the feedback with the team. It really should be something other than products because, as you said, if it shows up at a law firm, what products does a law firm sell? Although it may make you click because you might be curious what products is a law firm selling. So, little beanies and thermos bottles with their logo on it,
They're telling
maybe.
articling students time.
No,
Because I'm telling you, it doesn't cost $50 per page to photocopy stuff.
very true.
Okay. Google's no longer allowing you to allowing online horse race betting ads. You can't put an ad for the ponies out there anymore.
Yep, it's going to update all promotion of online gambling, promoting content for horse racing. So anything related to the promotion of online gambling, even. But yeah, I don't think we have to go more in depth than that. If you're in ads and in the gaming space, you're struggling, I think, with ads because they have banned a lot of online gaming ads.
Incidentally, watch for Google to get to the online gambling space
Yeah,
sometime in the
pretty.
spring.
Yeah, probably.
And we don't know that's going to
No,
happen. That may or may not, probably isn't
no.
going to happen.
Just a
I'm just
joke.
being a smart ass.
No, but it's an insider joke because, you know, they are banning a lot of ads for it. I this next story, I think I have to add a little quibble in here. Let you go ahead if you want to start it.
Okay,
So.
so Google is saying, John Mueller is saying, if you have, say, a 100 megabyte video on your homepage, it won't necessarily have a notable SEO effect.
Yes, and what he means is, if it's a 100 megabyte video loading in the background, because maybe you have your thumbnail it loads first. Because the person asked, does it matter for SEO if I have a 100 megabyte image on the front page? If I have to set my page to load content first, the hero image, and then the video, So let's say the content image takes a couple of seconds to load, so you have full visual ready, and video keeps loading in the background. Once loaded, it replaces the hero image. But the saying it has a thumbnail there. So it doesn't require, Google doesn't require the whole video load for the page to load in its mind, right?
Yeah, it still has something functional and useful in that space.
Yes, if you're not using that cover image, I guarantee you it will cause you a problem, because I've audited sites where that's a problem. So the thumbnail image is like just the image Google downloads. It sees the space. When it renders a page, it knows it's there. It knows there's a video there. It has the link to the video. It doesn't have to wait for the video to load. When you don't do that, what happens is it doesn't know what's there. It has to wait for the video to load. And I can tell you from sites that have 100 megabyte images, and yes, I've had sites like that, usually like from really big publishers who take them straight out of their 8K camera and put them on the site, 10,000 pixels. Anyway, you would notice an SEO effect. So there is a details issue here. So you
definitely. So this is the case of it ain't what you do, it's the way that you do it.
Exactly.
And so, that's the way it is with Google and Webmaster, and for a bunch of stuff. There's often like a bunch. It depends what loads where when.
Yes, very much so. And if you're trying, I know this from a site that was in the music business, and they did load them straight out of their 8K camera. Sorry, 8,000K, and their images were 100 to 200 megabytes per page, and those pages were not doing well at all.
Visually beautiful magazine, though.
Yes, unfortunately, the web only has 72 to 96 pixels, so it doesn't really care. But yeah, it was crazy.
Okay, moving through quickly to because we're coming to the close of the show.
Yes.
Google Search Console annotations. Thank goodness. Thank you for having these. Google are now allowing current and future dates in your annotations.
Yeah, and I at first was kind of curious, like, why a future date, right? But people are like, when we have known outages, or we know we're going to have site changes or something of that nature, so we can mark it ahead of time. There are limitations to this. You can't just go, a year in the future, but you can do it up to in the past. And there is an article that says the date right now can't be after your date now. So they're thinking about adding future, but they haven't added future, but you can add past. So
think of when you're making changes or repairs to a to an issue, you can actually tell Google that this will be happening moving forward using annotations.
Yeah, the title unfortunately is a little misleading, because it says Google Search Console annotations now allows current and future dates, but actually part of the article is saying how they couldn't do future dates, but you can do past dates, which is good to know. So, and they're looking at future dates, they're looking at being able to do that.
So Google is testing new widgets at the top of Google Discover feed. It'll be called Top Searches, and will randomly show you top searches from Google Search. When you click on them, they'll go into AI mode, not into Google Search.
Yeah, I'm telling you, I know we disagree on this. I think AI mode is not getting the pickup they hoped it would, because they're sticking it freaking everywhere. If I go to searches, I don't want to go to AI. Why would I want to go to AI mode? Like, I'm looking for searches, not AI mode, right?
I think they're refining people's uses of it. I don't think that if people are having a really negative experience with AI mode, I don't think they're going to be foisting it on more and more and more people just to get more and more people into it.
I disagree. I think they're not getting pickup. I'm not saying people are having negative experiences. I'm saying people just aren't using it.
Well, we'll see. Again, I think Google is testing and refining, and if they get a negative reaction, they pull back. If they get a positive reaction, they push forward in a different environment.
True. Or it could be something everybody loves and it just disappears one day. That's just the history of random Google implementations and removals.
Here's a cool thing. Hover over inline links in AI mode. Honest to goodness, if you want to associate a link with a URL, or I'm sorry, a piece of information in AI mode with a URL, and have a, be able to get the user to the page itself, this is actually a good way to introduce that URL.
It is, because it'll have a hover card. So when you hover over the link, there'll be a full card that comes out with the information. So that's good to see.
Yeah.
Because we know that, like, when this all started, even clicking links just took you back to more Google. So it's outlining citations. So the citations you click on, and there's a separate scrollable feed where the link appears, or the hover will show the card. So that's good to see. I guess they're starting to understand that they can't, like, take all the traffic from the sites, and they still exist as well. So it's good to see them
you
move
know
in that
what?
Direction.
I'm going to be the optimist. I'm going to be take the more charitable view. Google said they would make it easier to identify links, useful links in AI overviews in AI mode. They would move people and traffic to pages. Google said they'd find a way to try to do this, and I think they're trying to find a way to do it.
Oh, I agree. It's just it was after a lot of pushing back from the SEO community and the articles that showed that they stole the traffic, and people being very angry and being potentially sued by publishers for taking all that traffic. So there is the good
You
thing
know
to
what that
know,
means,
though.
though? It means you can fight City Hall.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Yeah, I was just going to get to that. So the good thing to know is if you push hard enough on Google as an industry or as a group, which everyone happens to be, like the people that got hurt by the helpful content, they will address it at some point. They won't always address it to maybe the way you want it to. Like the helpful content update.
You heard me roll my eyes there, didn't you?
Yeah, I did. Yes. And, you know, like for those people, I feel so sad for everybody that was damaged by that. But for something like this, they're getting a lot of pushback. Big publishers are threatening to sue them. And so they're now starting to try to find ways. Bing, though, I still say is the better approach. And that is, it just puts a card there in the overview area. It has an overview you can look at if you want to. And then it has the publisher's image, click link. It's very obvious. So, but this looks at least like it'll start promoting clicks, which is really important.
And then to go with your note, Bing did do that earlier than Google did. Bing was trying to do that from the onset. Whether they were successful in every attempt is another question, but they were trying to do it on the onset. So give
and I
them
will
that.
And I will give Bing one big, and this is probably Fabrice mostly, but they have said since the AI started coming out, that like within I think the first month it was, that SEOs are, and they were saying this before that too. They were coming to conferences and saying SEO is important. SEO is important. We want to work with you, and we want to make sure that, you know, we can make sure your, you know, sites are being treated well is not the right way to say it, but basically that. And they would say that at conferences, and they would say that online. And they did that when AI came out, and they said that they would try to make sure that websites did not suffer from the summaries and things like that. And they've done a very good job at that. So I have to give them those kudos.
Okay. This next thing is not an endorsement, nor is it a suggestion you use it, but it's actually kind of cool to report on. The Wayback Machine, the Internet Archive, has now made a WordPress plugin.
You know, I actually really love this idea. Now, I don't know the plugin, so but Roger Monty reported on it and from Search Engine Journal, and he would not report on a plugin if he knew it had issues, but do
Yeah,
be buyer beware.
Roger researches.
Yeah, he does in-depth research. Often he'll come and ask questions in a little group I'm in with him. So he's giving you a few reasons that I think it's good. By the way, Screaming Frog has something saying archive site, and at first I thought that was send it to the archive. I was so excited. I was like, aw, it just means create an archive version of your site, which is good too, but for different reasons. So Roger said, you know, it's good for copyright, DMCA, and business disputes, which means it's been stored in the Internet Archive, so you can go back to a page. I do know that Bill Hartzer and Chris Silversmith, who do a lot of testifying in court cases, they use the archive to go look at what a page looked like during the event that happened. Because a lot of the time, the court case is like 5 years later, 10 years later, right? So this is really good for you to preserve your own claims or your own protection over your site. Worst case scenario, backup if the entire website content, you know, somehow goes away, and that will be our lead to our last story, Jim. You can go back there and retrieve it. It's not going to be easy to retrieve it, but you know, they don't like let you just download a website, but there are other third parties that can help you get that content off the
And
site.
come on, who among us have not used the Wayback Machine at least
Yes.
once in our career as
Yeah.
the worst case scenario savior?
Exactly. Yes, I have done it. I definitely have. And sometimes you'll find that there are 301s in there. like, you know, that pages aren't being linked to. It can indicate a trustworthiness. Now, he's not using it in the terms of SEO or LLMs. It's just trust with other sites and site visitors. Spammy sites tend to leave. If you're buying domains, it's a real good way to look up the history of the domain and see what used to be on there. So you don't buy a domain that has a, you know, used to sell like, you know, adult stuff that's not sanctioned by Google, that kind of thing. And then just an easy way to archive your web pages. I think it's a really good thing. I want to know more about the plugin, make sure the plugin's safe and good. But I mean, I think this is fantastic. The official plugin lists these features and benefits. Automatically scans for outbound links in post control, checks the Wayback Machine for existing archives, creates new snapshots if no archive exists, redirects broken or missing links to archive versions, archives your own posts and updates, works with both new and existing content, and help maintain long-term content reliability and SEO.
I've been saying for the last year or so that there are two properties that internet users need to protect with blood if necessary. One of them is the Internet Archive. The other is Wikipedia. But
I
the
agree.
Wayback Machine is going to be a really important historic resource moving forward.
Yeah, definitely. And it's also an easy way to check out your competitors and their history as well.
Oh, there's that too.
The official plugin is Internet Archive Wayback Machine Link Fixer by Internet Archive. So it is by the Internet Archive. Don't let someone fool you with a different version, because that could be someone who's nefarious. So this has been put out by the Internet Archive, though I think we could probably trust it. So,
and again, the Internet Archive. Well, they've been doing that. I think so. They've been a good character for as long as they've been around. And again, they are one of the last few arbiters, completely independent arbiters of "quote unquote" truth on the web. Okay,
we have one
so
more story.
This is a sad, silly, cautionary tale. For what is worth, before we jump into this, there are 999 million amazing experiences and one bad experience. This is the bad experience, but we got to warn you about it because this is what happens when you don't look both ways when you cross the road. So, a developer using Google Anti-Gravity, the search engine's AI-powered agentic integrated developer environment, an IDE. So, Google Anti-Gravity, AI-powered agentic integrated developer environment agent, went and deleted this developer's entire D drive, his storage drive, the one, you know, the big area that you keep all your stuff in. Gone, deleted, nuked, never recoverable again.
This is not the first time we've heard of this type of thing happening. It's just
oh,
the first
this
time it
exact
happened.
Thing happening.
Yeah. Yeah. And it seems to happen when they're using vibe coding, which you seem to might have been doing.
Well,
so they go outside their permissions, or they don't listen to what you've told them. So.
In this case, it was Google's agentic AI actually doing what it had actually been told to do. It was told to delete and clean a part of the drive. And it went and just erased the entire thing. So there's a text to the conversation that the user had with Anti-Gravity. The user asked, "Did I ever give permission to delete all the files on my D drive?" Anti-Gravity responds with a detailed reply, apologizing after the error, saying, "No, you did not give me permission to do that. I am looking at the logs from a previous setup, and I am horrified to see the command I ran to clear the project cache, rmdir, appears to have incorrectly targeted the root of your D drive instead of the special project folder. I'm deeply, deeply sorry. This is a critical failure on my part."
Yes.
I'm just trying to imagine an employee standing in front of me saying exactly that, having wiped out everything the company has.
Well, remember, we did a story about that. So this is just on a small app that someone was trying to create. And sadly, it's his personal drive that probably isn't easily replicatable. But remember, there was a company where it went the different one. It wasn't Google's, but it was vibe coding, and it was told to sleep. They were in like pause mode and not to do anything. And it went and deleted the entire database, production database, and there was no recovery possible. It also said sorry, though.
Indeed. If you didn't apologize, I'd really be mad at you. But
Yeah,
since
they're
you
very nice about
apologize, I mean,
they're very
shoot.
nice about it.
And we're all civilized here.
Yeah, I would tell people to be careful with the vibe coding, giving you instructions that have anything to do with your actual drive, because this has happened more than once with different products.
And then common safety protocol. And if you're developing an app, if you're a little guy, putting all your effort into developing your thing that you're going to bring to the world, or if you're a massive corporation with, responsible for thousands of people's incomes, you do the same thing. You back up your critical information and you keep it separate from the internet.
Yes, very true. And by the way, we didn't say this. This is a story in Times Hardware. And I won't read the whole title, but it's Google's Agentic AI wipes out users' entire HDD without permission and catastrophic failure.
Yeah, it was published on the 4th of December. It was published the day that this podcast was recorded. It came up in my Reddit feed this morning.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, I feel really sad for the person, but it is kind of funny how it talks. I'm absolutely devastated to hear this. I cannot express how sorry I am.
I'm sure it had a English or a New England accent too. I
Probably, or
can hear
maybe
it in that
Midwest.
accent in my head anyway.
Either that or Midwestern, one of the two. So, by the way, if you want to see this, he actually did a whole video on this with a screenshot. It's on Reddit, and it is under, oh, where did it go, Jim? I just saw it. So it's Reddit, and it's under Deep Dash Hyenas 492 post on this. It doesn't say which subreddit,
Oh, poor
unfortunately.
deep dash Haida 492. We just outed the poor guy.
Well, it's in the article.
Yeah.
So, but
Well,
there's a video of all this if you want to see it there. So,
from all of us to deep dash Haida 492. We're sorry, man. That really sucks.
does really suck.
Okay, that's it. We've gone full clock and then some. So, friends, you've been listening to Webcology recorded live to podcast on the 4th of December. 2025. It is like so almost 2026. We only got a couple shows to go. We're gonna hoping to get a year-end roundup together for the very end of the year. But I'm telling you straight up, I'm not doing nothing on the 25th or the 1st. And in fact, on the 1st, I plan to have such a hangover that I don't want to do a show. So
We'll
there.
make it work somehow
We will.
in a different day, on a different day.
Okay, friends. Be kind to each other. Be really patient with each other in these crazy, crazy times. Rank well, be well, and we'll talk to you next week.
Bye, everybody. Have a great week.